Okay. Members, I'm going to call together. We're starting late because we're waiting for members, and I know there's lots of call on people's time this morning, but we're going to go ahead and get started. And we do have before us the first item of business, which is to pass out our recommendations for bonding. And we have a vehicle bill that one of the bills I had introduced. We deleted everything from that bill. It dealt with the issue originally of the community land trust. So we deleted all that language and we inserted. But it's dealt with the issue that we had talked about. And anyway, we're going to use that House File 2734. It has in it all the bills the bonding bills that went through this committee and some additional language. So I think I'll ask Mr. LaFaber to go ahead and take us through that, and we'll be voting to move that out this morning. And
Madam Chairman, members, the document is the H2734DE1 amendment. It provides the standard language for capital appropriations in Section 1. Then it prioritizes, as was requested by the Capital Investment Committee, in this case, the four bills are all given high priority. And the medium, low, and do not fund categories are not used. The first subdivision one, the $10 million, is Representative Moe's bill for the variety of activities, the Housing Development Fund. Subdivision 2 is the $20 million for public housing rehabilitation. And Subdivision 3 is the Hennepin County Opportunity Center $2.5 million bond appropriation. Then we get into the statutory language where we create the possibility of the nonprofit housing bond account being used with standing appropriations up to $2.4 million per year for up to 20 years. That was the delete everything to Representative Benson's bill meant to provide the money for the nonprofit housing development for housing and services. Section 6 then is the bond sale authorization language, which is the standard form for bonding requests. And then Sections 7, 8, and 9 are Representative Clark's bill providing for meetings with the stakeholders who are listed to consider other ways to prevent residential mortgage foreclosures and to address them, particularly through neighborhood land trust enhancements and requiring a report to the legislature on those meetings. And then finally, just the effective date.
Thank you. Any questions on the language that's before? Representative Anderson.
I'm sure on the first page of the delete all 1.8, well actually 1.7, says to acquire and better public land and build it. I'm concerned about why there's an and in there after acquire and better. To acquire doesn't make sense to me, but maybe that's the proper writing of it.
Madam Chairman, Representative Anderson, this is the language that Bond Council wants to use, and in bonding requests, we defer to them always, because they need this language to be able to sell the bond. And it refers to the Constitution, and they need the inclusive language so that they can do both, acquire or better, and better. This will be the language that will be at the top of the bonding bill that will apply to not only these bonding requests, but to any other bonding requests that may involve both acquisition or betterment. So this is the standard boilerplate for this.
So, Madam Chair, what does it mean, better public land?
Yeah,
oh.
It's a verb. It means to improve or to prepare. Oh. A betterment is an improvement.
Okay.
Two of us here.
It doesn't make sense to me, but I'm glad I got somebody who can explain it.
Ms. Anderson, I think what she's saying is it could be have the word improve instead of better services.
Madam Chair, better public land, is it meaning that we're taking land that's already in the public domain and we're improving it, or we're trying to make it better than what, like say we've got buildings under that are now falling down and we want to improve that public land?
That is some incentive, exactly. That would be to make an improvement on it, to improve the building, to a betterment on land could be a building, or it could be an improvement of an existing building.
Okay, thank you.
Any further discussion? Thank you, Ms. Carlos.
Madam Chair, my question is regarding the sections on the stakeholder consultation and beyond. Those look like issues that are going to require some funding for those studies. Who's to bear those costs, and where's the money coming from?
Senator McFarland, we don't think that this, as the author of the legislation, I don't think this should cost anything in particular. We're just asking them to do some of these. Hold meetings and consult with stakeholders all the time, and I don't see this being a very huge commitment. And I would hope at least something the agency would be willing to do.
Okay, so under the agency, then, is
Minister Harvey.
No, okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. That you wanted which agency?
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of points. I guess to that point, one of the things that we have continually heard from local governments, and we need to be cognizant of ourselves, is there is no such thing as a being absorbed by the agency. And I would think that if we're going to put this in here, there should be some fiscal implications that the agency at least can step up to the plate and say, yeah, that's within our operating budget. I guess I'd have some question on that. Maybe the agency wants to step up to the plate and tell us what kind of implications that might have. Everything we do here at the legislature has implications. And the bottom line is when we put into writing stakeholders consultation or stakeholders themselves, we're mandating that a group of people get together, and whether we're going to pay them per diem or what kind of situation is going to arise that finances are going to be needed. I always look back at our phone bill. And the phone bill has been implicated with, this is just a dime here, a nickel here, and pretty soon you got $5.60 on your phone bill that are not charges that were coming on one at a time that all of a sudden accumulate into a large area. So I guess, Madam Chair, I'm looking at this and going, if we're going to put this in a bill that we're going to forward and we're going to vote on, we need to know whether the agency is willing to step up to the plate and say, yeah, we can absorb that. I'd like to hear that from their ears. Are they here?
And we can certainly ask the agency, and so we'll ask them to come forward and let's indicate whether or not the agency is willing to have a kind of meetings that we're suggesting are part of their job.
And Madam Chair, I guess the question I'd like to have them address is: do they foresee a fiscal impact on this particular policy that we're pushing forward here?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tanya Orr from the Housing Finance Agency. Representative Peterson, as you may recall, the agency's operations are not funded by the general fund. They are funded from the agency's bond proceeds. So it's the difference between the money that we borrow and the rate at which we lend it. And that's how we fund the agency operations. So we are constrained by how much of a spread we can take. We putting together a working group on land trust will require some staff time, and will require both program staff time as well as support staff time. It will mean that we will have to lay aside some other project in order to do this. It was not my intention to ask for or to submit a fiscal note and ask for an appropriation for these for this effort, but it will. We can't do it without staff and time, and so that means that we will have to put aside something else temporarily while we fulfill the requirements of this provision.
Madam Chair, follow
up. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess to that point, we are going for transparency in government. If we're going to do that, then we need to know the cost implications of the things that we put into statute. And I think as we move forward on this, I would strongly encourage us to incorporate into this some kind of fiscal impact that says this is what it's going to cost to do this stakeholder. So we're making a conscious decision that we're taking monies away from the projects that we're looking to fund here in order to administratively, and it may be that we're administratively making it more efficient, but let's have a full conversation. Let's have the full knowledge of what we're voting for.
Madam Chair, if I could just add that with respect to this particular working group that we've been asked to, we're being asked to form, at least two of the three issues that have been identified, I think really we have immediate answers for, so I don't think that really would take any time at all. One of them, the answer is it's not a problem. The other one is we can do it, but we need the resources. And the answer to the third one really has to do with the Department of Revenue, and I don't have a clue about what, how we come to a resolution of that, but that, that would be what might take time. But the other two really won't take a great deal of time. So if that's any help, I think this is a relatively small burden in terms of the issues that we've been asked to address. I do have some concerns about the timeline because we will be developing a biennial budget over the summer, and you know, the indications are that's not going to be a fun exercise.
Representative Trumper.
Madam Chair, I guess I had an impression, contrary to Representative Severson's impression about the requirement of this section. You know, I don't know that we envisioned having a working group. I think it was, we simply wanted Deputy Commissioner Orr or someone else to have some conversations with some of the likely stakeholders here. I just can't imagine that we would need to put an appropriation or any kind of fiscal note attached to it. It just doesn't seem like it rises to that kind of demand on the agency. And you know, I just had a different impression than I think Representative Severson is articulating.
Any further discussion? Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess just the comment, what the Representative Trumper said, I guess my thought is, this is a bonding bill. What's this even doing in here? This has nothing to do with the bonding issue. So, I mean, the point is this should run by itself someplace else. It doesn't belong in a bonding bill. That's my first comment. Second, is, do we have any kind of a target that we're kind of shooting for in terms of what the total bonding values we might be dealing with in this committee, or are we just kind of passing on things in some kind of priority and just letting that decision be made by the bonding committee? That's the way.
Representative Eastman, we do not have a target. I can answer that right off the top of the
then maybe
here, and that's one of the reasons why we are suggesting each of our bills go forward with a high priority. A number of committees are doing this. We do not have a target, or we'd have to be setting some specific priorities. Furthermore, if you look at the consultation that we're talking about here, it does have to do with bonds, and I think there's probably no more urgent issue right now before a lot of Minnesota citizens than the foreclosure crisis. And I would hope, for goodness sakes, that we would expect our housing finance agency to be able to meet with some of the stakeholders and help us figure out some creative ways that they've not yet figured out to help us solve this problem. They're doing one thing, and that's great, and we've got a bunch of folks working with a couple of other agencies of state government to try to do some things with foreclosure. I think it's very appropriate that we ask them to take as part of their regular ongoing work this issue. And we do point out the means here, or the requirement or the request, that what they look at and they consider, I think is the exact language, consider the use of 501c3 bonds, the same ones that we are authorizing in the earlier part of the bill. So, you know, we're asking our agency to give us their best shot at this, and that's what, why it's in this bill. We don't want to wait around, you know, for another year to start considering it.
I mean, I respect that, Madam Chair. Can I make one more comment?
Sure.
I respect that. I mean, we can obviously look at things differently. I see it as a bonding bill, and I see this as a separate function. So, mm-hmm. I mean, we just see that differently. The other issue that I just like to ask, could you talk a little bit about Section 2 and just... explain the priorities as you have them laid out in the bill, and kind of some reasoning as to why some are high, why some are medium, low, and so on.
Thank you, Representative Eastman. Actually, we are putting all of our priorities at the high level. We're not dividing them separately. We have the option to divide them up, but since we have no target, what we've decided is that, and what I'm recommending as chair, is that we go forward with each of these suggestions that are before us with a high priority level. And this is one of the ways we want to make our mark, I guess, with the bonding committee, to indicate we have a housing crisis. And these are all very important directions and priorities that we want them to consider. So, since there's no target, I think this is what has been recommended by several different folks. I know other committees are doing this as well. Okay. Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a point of discussion, I think, as we go forward on this, and I know the 501c3 position section that we were talking about here in the concept of housing agency is a new concept. I think it's not unlike what we've seen in the bioscience provision that the University of Minnesota brought forward. But what that does do for us as a legislature and as members of the legislature, it takes out of our hands and puts it on the accountability of future legislators who are going to have to balance the budget obligated monies. I think a couple of examples are the University of Minnesota Stadium that we've obligated for 20 years, at 25 years at $20 million, and the Teachers Retirement Fund, which we've obligated another $18 million, which automatically takes off the top almost $40 million. And if we continue in this vein, we constrain future legislators budgets by the amount that we are laying on them. So I guess it is with serious pause that I begin this conversation to say we need to begin to rein in some of these obligations that we're obligating to future legislatures and not use this as a creative funding source, but rather take with the full weight of the responsibility that if we aren't willing to deal with the budget shortfall that we've got and we're going to put it on the backs of future legislators, then we need to really ask ourselves, are we doing the job we're supposed to be doing here? And I guess I just wanted to make that comment to say we are elected here to try and bring into constraints how much we spend and how much we bring in. And it isn't responsible for us to continue to lay on the future legislators creative spending. So I'm not speaking necessarily against this thing, but I am just trying to say, get my voice out here to say, look, we as legislators need to balance the budget and not commit future legislators to something that we have failed to do.
I just ask a question in this regard. If the funding were similar to what had been done before with GEO bonds, would we not also be committing future legislatures to paying back those bonds?
Why don't we have Ms. Orr come up and reiterate how the GEO bonding works as compared to the nonprofit bonding, and just the committee members need to know what we are committing. I think what you're suggesting, Representative Peterson, is that this committee actually will be deciding every 2 years if we're going to carry the debt of $2.4
million.
So why don't you go ahead and just explain maybe again, as you did, I think, yesterday, the difference between the two types of bonding.
Madam Chair, members, Representative Benson is correct that this is this proposal is not dissimilar from GEO bonds in that if you put $30 million of permanent supportive housing in the capital investment bill, you would be committing future legislators to making the debt service payments on the bonds that would fund that housing. The difference is that because it's not going to be publicly owned, you make a separate appropriation of the debt service from the general fund. And but you are, again, committing future legislators. The other difference is, which I hesitate to mention because I hope this would never happen, is you make this appropriation for 20 years, but any future legislator could repeal the appropriation. It would obviously cause problems in paying the debt service on the bonds, but you have that ability in the future, which is the difference in the GEO bonds where you've pledged the taxing authority of the state and you don't really have that authority.
I would just like to emphasize that the state has a very high bond rating and so does the housing agency, and I doubt either, at least I would not be prepared to endanger that rating.
Okay.
in the future if I'm here.
Representative Stevenson and Representative Kemper.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess, Tanya, a little quickly, but I'm just curious as to with these 501c3, when it's going through their binding authority, are the numbers that we obligate as a state to back up those bonds counted against the 3% GO bonds that we figure on a biannual basis to say this is the maximum amount we can bond for GO bonds? Are those considered in that number?
Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, actually there was a conversation about this yesterday in the Capital Investment Committee, and the conclusion was that it had in the past the other examples of this. For instance, the state office buildings, the human services building, and agriculture health building, and the Gopher Stadium were not counted towards the 3%.
Okay.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My goal on this was just to have the discussion a little opened up, and I think that does kind of lend some light to this as well. That, you know, the bonding authorities are constrained to look at what the state is obligated because of their financial status, and if we obligate those future funds, then it does go above and beyond the 3% that keeps us in the AAA rating.
Representative Kemper?
I'm just kind of processing Representative Stevenson's comments. It doesn't seem to me, I share your same concern about the overall borrowing and indebtedness that the state is going. On the other hand, I don't, from Deputy Commissioner Orr's explanation, it doesn't seem like we're creating any greater difficulty with these 501c3 bonds than we are with general obligation bonds. It seems to me, I think her explanation was essentially the same outcome of it in terms of liability. And if we don't use this, I guess I'm wondering what else would we use other than GO bonds to accomplish the objectives here of dealing with the mortgage foreclosure issue. To me, that's a big concern. I've been running around here articulating that for a couple days, that we seem to have a flat reaction at this point in time to the foreclosure crisis, and it's just going to roll across this state and this country. There's a lot more of these adjustable rate mortgages that are going to unfold in the next year, probably a million more homeowners, and a lot of them are going to be in our state. And I don't think we have a plan on the table as far as I can see. In fact, I wish we had the stakeholders meeting tomorrow on a recommendation on this so we could include it in the bonding bill, because we're still going to end up waiting a long time.
I just would like a little clarification from you, Madam Chair, having to do with the history of this 3% issue in the first place. My understanding is not in statute. Is that correct?
And I believe that actually, I can have Ms. LaFeva talk about this, but I believe it's actually in contention right now whether or not it's even a good measure that we should be using anymore, and it's being discussed as something we might want to throw out. But Ms. LaFeva, do you want to comment?
Madam Chairman, Representative, I believe that those are the guidelines that the Department of Finance has up, sort of best practices, financial practices guidelines, but not statutory requirements.
Thank you. All right, good discussion. Any other questions or comments? Okay, members, the bill, House File 2734, is before us to pass and be re-referred to. Oh, yes, Stephen, thank you. We need to adopt this as an amendment first. So the amendment is before us, House File Number 2734. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Now the bill is before us, and it will be re-referred to the, the motion is to recommend that this bill be passed and returned to the Finance Committee with a recommendation for re-referral to the Capital Investment Committee. So basically, it's on its way to the bonding committee. Representative Moe?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize for being late. We have so many things going on at the same time here. I just wanted to thank the chair and the committee for including $10 million for emergency shelters and transitional housing. While that discussion is continuing with MHFA, whether those funds are available or not for those, and I think that answer to that remains clear, this will provide some assurance to those who are trying to build emergency shelters that, in fact, the state does prioritize them, at least the legislature does. So just a thank you for including that.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor of subject of House File 2734, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails, and the motion is adopted, and the bill is put forward. Now we're going to hear from Minnesota Housing Finance Agency on the 207 legislation and housing assistance in Minnesota. Welcome back up to the front table on the floor.
Madam Chair?
Representative Shumpert.
Yes. I would just like to say to the committee members that, you know, in all the work we did with the flood this fall, Deputy Commissioner Orr and Commissioner Marks have been just really great to work with, and I really want to commend you publicly for that. Ms. Orr, I mean, I've talked to those people sometimes three or four times a week working out problems, and it's just really been helpful to have helpful people on the other end of the phone line, and I really want to acknowledge that publicly.
Thank you. Thank you on behalf of the whole committee.
Thank you. Members, you have three documents before you that I hope will together give you a good sense of what the agency has been able to accomplish in the last couple of years. One is a two-pager that's fairly dense that just has two facts on it. The other is a program assessment that is produced every year. Yours, I think, is not in color, although a color one was delivered to your office. And this provides information, sort of quantitative information about loans that were closed each year. And finally, you have a PowerPoint presentation. So I'll just go over to the highlights of each of these documents. The key facts document is really a very big picture of the agency. The thing that I'd like you to note is that for the Affordable Housing Plan, which is the agency's budget for a two-year period, we have a $1.6 billion budget. This includes the state appropriations, which are slightly less than 10% of the total budget. Now, even though they're less than 10% of our total budget, they are crucial. They are terribly critical to us meeting our mission. It is the state appropriations that allow us to combine with resources that we need to repay the bondholders, that allow us to serve lower-income households and meet some of our strategic priorities. Our affordable housing plan two-year period is slightly different than the biennium, so the months don't totally match up, but this does give you a sense of where most of our resources come from. Turning your attention to the program assessment, this is a quantitative picture of what the age of loans that were closed and housing units that were first occupied during the last program year. So this picture does not reflect any of the appropriations that you made last year for the biennium that we're now in. The first page has some very key highlights. I'd like to draw your attention to Table 1, which starts on page 7. It provides you a look at the incomes of the households that we serve. And I think what's important to note is that about 50% of the households that were served by the agency last year had incomes of under $35,000 a year. Table 7, which is found starting on page 19, provides you a look at the various programs that help us meet our strategic goals or our strategic priorities. So I think what's important in this is for you to note that it takes a lot of different resources to get to financing new affordable housing units or preserving the existing affordable housing units or meeting our long-term homelessness goals. Finally, on table 9, which starts on page 25, is a regional distribution of the resources. Again, these are loans that were closed and housing units that were first occupied in the last program year. We have divided up the resources by an RFP award and other funds. The other funds would include all of our mortgage revenue bonds. one of the things that I want to be sure that you are aware of is when you look at this program assessment from year to year, you need to remember that things vary from year to year, and so that we may have one year it would appear as the region is overserved, and then the next year it will be another region that's overserved. You will note that in the Twin Cities there's a $20 million of RFP awards. $11 million of that was awarded last spring to Minneapolis to address the foreclosure crisis in North Minneapolis. So obviously that $10 million award skews things towards the Twin Cities for this particular year. But in general, while we don't have a firm allocation of resources based on regional needs, we do a fairly good job, I think, and particularly if you would look at it over a five-year period, of spreading the money so that it does coincide with the estimates of regional needs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Orr. I just have a technical question here. You said that this is reporting through fiscal year 07, and as you know, we separated out tribal housing last year. How might that be reported in the future? So when we can, our constituents who are wanting to track that,
it will be reported separately.
And the same, so it'll be a line item on this.
Okay.
If we were here in 2008, then we would have that information in a line item here based on the fiscal year.
Yes, sir.
Great. Madam Chair, just a quick comment, somewhat unrelated. I just wanted to recognize that Ms. Orr has met with me and to try to help our discuss our local housing issue, and so I do appreciate her making the time to do that. And Hours to Serve House of Hospitality has your contact information. So.
And they have contacted me.
Good.
So, if there are other questions about the program assessment, I know it's a lot to absorb, but I find it a very helpful reference point if you want to think about, look at who we're serving and how many help groups were served. It's a good document. I tend to carry it around with me. It's and we do provide it to you every year.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just trying to get my hands around some of the projects that you've been working on. On page 19 here, you've got the community activity set-aside program. You've got no home ownership assistance fund and the with home ownership assistance fund. And I'm looking at those at $155,000 and $156,000 per household unit served. I'm wondering if you can maybe shed some light on that. Tell me what that's about.
Certainly. The Community Activity Set-Aside Program is a subset of our Mortgage Revenue Bond Program. And it is a program that requires a partnership between a lender and a community organization to come to the agency and ask that a certain amount of mortgage revenue bond proceeds be available for a particularly identified community need. This is around first-time home buyers, and it is the first mortgage for homeowners. So that's why the assistance per household is quite large, because this is the average purchase price of a house of a first-time home buyer under this community set-aside program. The with and without the homeownership assistance fund is the difference between households who were served who received the first mortgage from the agency, but then also receive down payment assistance and closing cost assistance versus households who did not receive down payment assistance or closing cost assistance from the agency.
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Mr. Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. So this is not the monies that are obligated from state funds. These are just dollars that we're helping to leverage to get them into the house.
That's right. The only state appropriation is the Homeownership Assistance Fund. In that group, that is the state appropriated dollars. We have on and off had the homeownership assistance funds funded by the state, And those are deferred loans that are repaid when the house is sold or is no longer the primary residence. And so we're able to recycle those money into new loans.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Shumpert.
Yes. Deputy Commissioner Orr, on page 25, you referred to the $20 million that was given to the Twin Cities, and you said, I think, $11 million of that had been given to dealing with the foreclosure crisis. What exactly, can you tell us what exactly they did to address the foreclosure crisis? Or did
Representative Shumpert, the money was provided through the Family Housing Fund. The money is primarily being used by a nonprofit developer to acquire homes in North Minneapolis that have been foreclosed and that are boarded and vacant, and to rehabilitate those homes if they're needed, and then sell the homes to low and moderate income families. So the money is primarily being used for the acquisition and rehab. If there's a, we're unfortunately in a situation in North Minneapolis that sometimes property values have gone down dramatically. And so while they're working on negotiating deals from the bank, they're not always able to get as good a deal as we would like or everyone would like, so that sometimes the cost of rehabilitation and acquisition is going to be more than the property is worth, valued at this point. So we may have some what we call gap financing, and that's part of what the $11 million would get used for as well.
And so the money isn't actually going, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, so the money isn't actually going to help the people who might be in a foreclosure. It's going to acquire a property after those people have been foreclosed on and moved out of the property, correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Sumner, that particular award is used for neighborhood remediation. I see the foreclosure issue as sort of having two components. One is the homeowners who are in foreclosure, and the other crisis is in the neighborhoods that are seeing incredibly large numbers of foreclosures. So this is, the $11 million was to deal with the neighborhood side. We are trying to help. On the homeowner side, we're trying to help by doing a number of things. We have, in December, we announced an additional $1 million for foreclosure counseling. We have recently, we're about to receive $500,000 from the private sector to increase the amount of money available for loans to homeowners who are behind, and if they could catch up, then they would avoid a foreclosure. We have negotiated transfers of money from the Department of Commerce and are using that money to literally do door knocking in areas that have high concentrations of foreclosures or have a lot of subprime loans to get people to go in and see a counselor and use the counseling services to work out to renegotiate a loan so that they don't go into foreclosure. And we have applied for absolutely expect to receive nearly $5 million in federal money for foreclosure prevention counseling that would yet again expand the network of foreclosure counselors.
Thank you. So the money that you got from the Department of Commerce, can you put a dollar figure on that, please?
It was $500,000.
Mm-hmm. I remember we had actually tried to negotiate that last year, I think at the end of the session, and had resistance from the department, so I'm glad they came forward, although I think the pot of money there was significantly more.
Madam Chair, my recollection, and I haven't checked the figures, is that it was slightly over $1 million total.
Maybe you could check that a bit more.
Okay, Amy.
Yes, I believe so.
I'm curious about what you were just talking about with foreclosure counseling.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to have a little bit more explanation. Are you connecting these people with resources so that they can consolidate bills, so that they can meet, or, what is the mechanism in place? What resources are you providing these homeowners so that they can solve this foreclosure crisis that they're in?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Representative, we have a system, we have a network of foreclosure prevention counselors throughout the state. In Greater Minnesota, most of the counselors are through the Lutheran Social Services. We have an organization called the Home Ownership Center that actually acts as a pass-through in some cases and does training and collects statistics about the foreclosure prevention counseling, as well as home ownership counseling for first-time home buyers. And as part of the state program, the Home Ownership Education Counseling and Training Program, we have money available for foreclosure prevention loans, so actual financial assistance. So there are two primary components to this prevention assistance. One is financial counseling, which might include, you really can't afford this house, and given your salary, and you really need to think about downsizing. And here's how we can help you do that. Or it might be, can we think about some ways that you can reduce your debt so that you can make your mortgage payments? Or it might be, let's talk to the bank and see what we can work out. And instead of your adjustable rate mortgage adjusting 5% in May, let's see what we can do about getting it down so that it's a payment that you can actually afford. Or if you come in and you've lost your job and haven't made your payments for 5 months, we can provide up to 6 months of mortgage payments or contract relief payments and utilities and taxes and sort of related housing expenses. And that will be a loan that is repaid at a later date when the family is in a financial situation to do so. So we have both the counseling part and the financial assistance that's available. And we have statewide coverage with the money that we made available in December, which was combined with the Family Housing Fund and the Greater Minnesota Housing Fund money. We were able to add 19 counselors across the state. With the money that we will be getting from the federal appropriations, we will probably be able to double the number of counselors. Now, that's one time only money, and it's 1 year, so we're trying to figure out how we can make other money stretch a little bit further. But it will be another significant expansion in the network.
So just along the line of the actual helping people through a difficult transition, mm-hmm. I know it's such a good investment to maybe help people for a few months rather than let them become homeless, get into that whole system, lose mm-hmm. all their property and so on, helping them out for a few months with a loan that they can pay back. What is the demand on that funding right now? I know we've often run short at the local level with folks who are applying for foreclosure mm-hmm. prevention assistance. What does that look like right now? Is the money spent out? What kind of funding is in that?
Madam Chair, actually, the financial assistance is limited by statute to 6 months with a maximum of $5,500. So you will be seeing a bill coming through later that will raise that maximum, because counselors are saying to us, the people that are most likely to be in danger of foreclosure are people whose mortgages were made in the last 3 years. There's lots of research that supports that. Those are the people who bought houses when house prices were high. So their monthly mortgage payments are higher than those of us who bought our houses 20 years ago. So the $5,500 cap has been a problem, because people are behind 5 months, but their arrearages is more than $5,500. We have not seen the financial system be as beneficial as we would like because of that artificial barrier. So you will see a bill coming before you later that will raise that cap and actually set a formula based on census data, so that we won't have to come back periodically, but it will continue to adjust with the reality for the situation. We actually think that between raising the cap and the additional money that we're getting from the private sector, that we actually will be able to help more people now.
And okay, that's great. And then what is the status of that fund right now? Is there money in the?
There is money available, Madam Chair, for financial assistance at this point.
What are we talking about? That's available.
You know, we allow the counselors to sort of use it flexibly, and so I think that we have about a little over $1 million available, but I would need to go back and double check because it's made available through this whole network of counselors.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a personal experience with this. My niece was living in one of the suburb areas out here, and they had gotten about 3 months behind in their rent because this provision had come through in the last session here. I gave her some direction to say, hey, contact Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. It turned out that there were funds that were allocated in a particular area. Those had run out. She was not able to pay access. Are those divided up into areas, or how is that allocated?
Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, I actually think because it was a rental situation that was the Family Homeless Prevention Program, not this Foreclosure Prevention Program. And I think it was a rental situation, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was it home ownership?
Yeah.
Yes, they are allocated by counselor. So we have various programs that are allocated funding. They request a level of funding, and then based on how much is appropriated, the appropriation that was made in July was allocated later in the summer. Your niece may have been caught at the end of the biennium problem.
Wasn't much comfort to her.
Pardon me?
It wasn't much comfort to her.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Go, Stephen.
I'd like to proceed to a PowerPoint presentation to just give you a little information about the appropriations that were made last year. As you know, we received a 64% increase in state appropriations over the previous biennium. We have already committed 53% of that money. We have two ways that funding is awarded, state appropriations. One is what we call a super RFP. That is a request for proposals that is issued twice a year for home ownership programs and once a year for rental programs. It is an RFP that is a combination of a number of programs with the idea that applicants will only have to come and apply once for the resources that they need instead of having to apply to each individual program. The other reason we call it a super RFP is because the Family Housing Fund and the Greater Minnesota Housing Fund and at times the Metropolitan Council make money available, announce availability of their funds through our RFP as well. They are partners with us in funding a lot of affordable housing, and so this does mean that applicants only have to go one place as opposed to going two or three places to get their funding. We have a few programs that because of their unique activities are individual RFPs. The vast majority of those have already been announced and awards made. You can see on page 7 the general criteria that we use in making selections. I wanted to just give you a few highlights of what we've done with the money that was appropriated last year. As you know, the Family Homeless Prevention Program was doubled. We have been able to use that money to expand into 22 more counties. There's a pretty map on page 8 that indicates the counties that we've expanded, and the existing programs also received increases. On the homeownership side, we've thus far, and remember this is one funding round out of the biennium, so already we have been able to fund 74 affordable home ownership units in Greater Minnesota and 103 in the Twin Cities. One of the highlights is that we made a $1.2 million award to Twin Cities Habitat for them to acquire land, lots in platted subdivisions in Carver and Scott County. that they will build on over the next 3 to 5 years. We're in this market now where developers have more land supply than they are comfortable holding at this point. And so people are able to get pretty good prices. And so we thought it made sense to help Habitat acquire land at these lower prices that they will use in the future to serve very, very low income households. On the rental side, we have funded in this first funding round 664 units in Greater Minnesota and 1,693 in the Twin Cities. One of the projects that we funded was $4.5 million to Dakota County for a youth-supported housing project. This is a 24-unit project. It will be publicly owned by the Dakota County CDA. We've also provided operating subsidies for this project. We're very excited about it being in Eagan and being a youth project, which is really desperately needed. Another example of a project that we funded, a rental project we funded, is the Longfellow Station Flats, which is on the Hiawatha Light Rail Line. It is both mixed income and mixed use. There will be retail on the first floor, and we will have a combination of affordable housing and market rate housing in this project. And the rents, and we will have a combination of single rooms, sort of efficiency apartments, and two bedrooms. So it will be good for singles as well as young families to get started.
Representative Shelter?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a question about the 664 units funded in Greater Minnesota. Are those primarily to nonprofits or exclusively to nonprofits? And are they like 6 units or 20 units? Or do you have any idea about that?
I haven't gone back and looked. I believe that they are mostly nonprofits, but not exclusively.
Okay.
The size of the projects range. I don't think that there are any large ones, but I'd be happy to go back and give you a precise.
Okay. No, that's okay. I was just curious about that. Thank you.
And finally, I know you've heard about this earlier, but another highlight is for the first time you appropriated money specifically for the preservation of public, federally funded public housing. We were able to assist 24 public housing authorities. Over 1,700 units of public housing were stabilized. You can see from the map there that these public housing authorities are in various places throughout the state, both in Greater Minnesota and the Twin Cities area.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. So this is the first time we've done this. We've been helping prevent loss of public housing for some time. Is it? Are you talking about it this time in a particular way?
Madam Chair, you're correct that you have provided funding to prevent federally assisted housing from leaving the federal program, but that's all been privately owned housing. This is the first time that we've had specific funding for a public for public ownership. So we have 3 more funding rounds left in this biennium. The next homeownership funding round is actually. Applications are, the deadline has passed. We'll be making decisions in April. We'll have another big funding round in the fall. Applications will be due in midsummer. So we've got a ways to go yet, but we have less than half the money available. I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Okay, any other comments, questions? If not, thank you very much. I guess we're done with our... Oh, it's a minute. Thank you. Who has read those minutes? Representative Benson?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the minutes for February 19th, 2008.
Okay. Motion before it to approve those minutes. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion to there, and the minutes are approved and adopted. Okay, members, we're going to be meeting next Tuesday, and we'll have a couple of bills before us then. And sounds like the agency has some legislation they're going to bring us. If there's any other members who have legislation that you want to consider, please get it to us right away. I'd like to take a look at it. Thank you very much, and the meeting is adjourned.